Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power,
fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
All right, we want to talk about the WSL because it has very much become the league of choice in women's football. A huge number of star-studded names have arrived in the league over the last few weeks. I'm joined on the line by Harriet Drudge of The Athletic. Evening, Harriet.
Good evening.
So, where to start with the big names arriving in the WSL? We might talk about Manchester United because they signed two American World Cup winners in Tobin Heath and Christian Press on one-year deals, which fits in what's been happening at Manchester City and Chelsea as well. What's changed over the last 12 months? Is this just the continuing boost from England's success at the World Cup in recent years and the renewed interest levels? Or is there something else going on that all these players are arriving in the WSL?
I think the last couple of years there's been significant investment in the league. You know, Barclays came on as a principal sponsor, and you know the top players in the world have been coming to the league for a little while now, and it's just taken a little bit longer for the US stars to you know take that leap. And you know the international, well, the schedule across the leagues this year is kind of allowing for it given the circumstances that we're in, and yeah, it's really exciting that all of these World Cup winners are coming over and will be gracing the WSL with their presence this season.
Manchester United, the new Manchester United, relatively newly formed. It was only 2018 the current team came into existence. The history of the women's team at Manchester United then, it seems when the Glazers arrived that as part of the cost cutting, they cut the team. Was there just so much pressure that Manchester United, the worldwide brand that they are, didn't have a women's team that they had to relent? Is that how this came about?
I think, you know, the women's game in the UK has been, the landscape of it has been changing. And that was always a conversation that was coming up. Why doesn't Manchester United have a women's team? And yeah, it got to a point where, you know, it became, you know, commercially viable. And also, you know, it made sense for them to significantly invest in a women's team. And, you know, I'm very glad they did. It was a real statement in the world, you know, the global game. Not just in the UK. So, yeah, it's taken, you know, they started in 2018, as you said, with a very young squad. There was experience there of players who played in the league before. But now, you know, they're really making a statement with these two signings in particular about where they want to go and where, you know, the plan is for that future development.
The surprise maybe as well is the current landscape in these COVID times and cost cutting and how that would affect the WSL, who are all tied in, the vast majority of them, with men's teams, who are trying to cut costs, who are maybe cutting back on their own transfer budgets. That certainly doesn't seem to be the case. It seems as though actually this league and these clubs are going from strength to strength, and that finally maybe the penny has dropped with Manchester United. Liverpool probably still a work in progress, but Chelsea and Manchester City have come around to it in the last couple of years, that this is something that they not just need to support, that is very much worthwhile supporting, that this can be a huge success story for their clubs.
Yeah, absolutely. And the clubs that have always had a one club mentality that encompasses a women's team going from strength to strength. Man City are kind of, you know, one of the more recent examples of that. But when they started their women's team, you know, a few years ago now, they were very much of that opinion. Arsenal have always been doing that. Liverpool, when they won the league, the WSL in 2015, they were also of that mindset. That's changed slightly over the last few years. But yeah, I think we are seeing more and more investment in the women's game from traditionally, you know, men's super clubs, and also, you know, making sure that those clubs that aren't attached to men's clubs are, you know, also getting the support that they need. Bristol City, or, you know, formerly Bristol Academy, and, you know, we're going from strength to strength now.
the one shame is that they're not able to capitalise fully on all these players arriving because fans aren't allowed to matches by and large. It seems in the past week again, there's been huge cutbacks in England as to how many supporters will be allowed in. And I know even from being across in Manchester, and like they've such a brilliant stadium in the shadow of the Etihad where you can fit 5,000-6,000, it's a perfect size. Been at a Manchester City Chelsea game, they're getting packed houses for those matches. That's not the case for the foreseeable future. While these big clubs are supporting it now, long term, have you got any sense of what the effects, what the negative effects of COVID will be and of this crisis for the women's game?
I think it's a conversation that's ongoing at all levels, at all kind of points of the football pyramid in England, especially, and across the UK. We don't know yet. We don't really know the long-term impacts and what they will actually be for, you know, the biggest Premier League clubs. So it would be a real shame if all the good work that's gone into developing the women's game was, you know, to come a cropper because of this pandemic. But I think the structures are, you know, well established now at clubs that, you know, they've not been relying on. Obviously, crowds are a big factor, but they haven't solely been relying on that. And they'll also be, you know, the fan base is so engaged and so passionate that they are, you know, they will support the women's game in all different ways. And I think it will take a bit of creative marketing, creative thinking about how to best kind of mobilise that support again, if it isn't kind of, you know, through the gates. But I think that will continue.
So who are the standout players that people should be keeping an eye out for? Because it is on the BBC, they're shown highlights every weekend, straight after Match of the Day, so you're getting to see all the games, you're getting to see all the players. Like Alex Morgan is standout at Tottenham. Pernille Harder are possibly the most expensive player of all time. Like, we're talking, what, 250 grand of a transfer fee to bring her to Chelsea? Who are the players that over the first few weeks have really stood out?
There's been quite a lot. There have been a lot of goals. There was also this kind of, obviously there's been a lot of new signings, but there are also a few players who were signed either partway through last season or, you know, young players coming through. So one player I'm particularly interested in seeing is Sam Kerr, who, you know, did come into Chelsea last season, but, you know, she's just getting kind of used to the league. And linking up, like you say, with Pernille Harder is going to be really fascinating to watch at Chelsea. And they've got a devastating array of attacking talents there. You know, the top scorer and player of the year last season was Bethany England. So where does she fit in into that kind of that team with Harder and Kerr? That'll be really fascinating. And obviously Rose Lavelle and Sam Mewis coming in at Manchester City, Lucy Bronze making a return. That'll be really, really interesting to see. You know, they've made a real statement there in those three signings coming in. And then there's some young players also at City. Chloe Kelly coming from Everton. She had an incredible season last season. And one in particular at Manchester United is always going to be one to watch is Lauren James. She took the league by storm, and she's still, you know, really young, really raw, but she'll be playing alongside two World Cup winners now. And what that will do for her development is really, really exciting.
There's obviously a big Irish interest in the league as well. You just have to look at that Brighton squad where you've got the likes of Megan Connolly, Denise O'Sullivan has got there, Rhianna Jarrett is progressing as well. Katie McCabe at Arsenal, they're playing now at the very, very highest level. In terms of contenders then for the league, is it those four, City, United, Chelsea, Arsenal, or do a Brighton have a chance of somehow managing to find a way through?
No, I think it will be that kind of top three from last season. And I think the potential of Arsenal not having Champions League football to contend with this season might play a big, you know, have a big impact on that. Manchester United, I think it's still kind of a team that, you know, they want to be challenging that top three. Whether that happens this season or not, I'm not sure. We don't want to pin too much on, you know, Heath and Press making, you know, the biggest impact, given, you know, the recruits that have been made across the league as a whole. So I think it will still be coming down to Arsenal, City and Chelsea.
The one question, and I guess the depth is increasing all the time and the overall standard is getting better and better. Watching the games over the last few weeks, there's still a few too many 7, 8, 9s being scored that you do have the top six, seven teams who are of a very, very high standard. Is there too much of a gap between top and bottom in the league still?
That's a good question. I think six and sevens can happen in any form of the game. It doesn't just happen in women's football. Newcastle won 7-1 last night, I think it was. Mm. And I think, you know, I think that the gap between the top and the bottom is perhaps kind of widening slightly. But as a whole, the league is elevating kind of together in it being further advanced than it was in just a few years ago.
Yeah, it does certainly seem that way. And as I say, it's very easy for people to access now as well. Here in Ireland, you can watch the highlights on the BBC. And because there's so much Irish interest, we'll be keeping a very close eye on it. Harriet, brilliant to talk to you. Thanks for setting that up for us.
You too. Thanks, Nathan.
That is Harriet Drudge from The Athletic talking about the WSL, and lots more to come on that over the coming weeks.
The Football Show on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, as obnoxiously passionate about soccer as Frank Lampard after the final whistle. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
I'm prepared to do anything I can
to
play my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Thursday night's football show here on Off the Ball. If you can't join us live, well, the best thing to do is to subscribe on the OTB Sports app. You get the podcast every single night. A lot of live football going on this evening. And we have Kenny Cunningham with us for the next hour as well. What a treat. Good evening, Kenny.
Evening, Nathan.
We're going to keep a very close eye on what's happening in Moldova, Kenny, because Dundalk are over there. They're playing Sheriff and they're into extra time. It is 1-1, 95 minutes gone. And Dundalk right now have been looking the better team, certainly as the game came to a close. They had a chance right at the very end, a corner kick headed just wide by Brian Gartland. But this is a huge opportunity, particularly because of what's happened in the game between the two sides that were vying to meet the winners of this match, which were Klaksvik of Faroe Islands and Dinamo Tbilisi of Georgia. Klaksvik have won that game 6-1. So Dundalk will play a team from the Faroe Islands for a place in the Europa League if they can win tonight. Victory tonight will be worth 300 grand to Dundalk. Victory then next week would be worth at least a guaranteed 2.9 million. So that is what at stake. It is a huge opportunity. Never before, think of an Irish side have had a better opportunity in terms of the teams they have to go and beat to get into Europa League. So we'll keep an eye on that. 97 minutes gone. There will be penalties, obviously, if it's to go that way. But listen, there's obviously been a lot going on in Dundalk over the last few months, Kenny. But this would be an absolute game changer if they can get through over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, it would be. I was speaking to somebody today, actually, about the Dundalk situation. And they mentioned that fact that if they could get through tonight's game, Nathan, it would probably be an inferior side who they'd play in the next round. Which seems a little bit strange. You always think that, you know, round by round, the strength of the opposition will increase. But yeah, whatever the situation, if they could just somehow find a way through, even on penalties against it. So the Moldovan champions, they think they're playing tonight, aren't they? So not an easy game. I was looking at the result there this evening. Obviously, they went the goal behind early on and showed a bit of character to come back. But they're a very experienced side, Nathan. You know what I mean? A lot of experience within that squad. So, you know, they wouldn't panic going a goal behind, and you know, and I've obviously played a way back into the game. You mentioned a great chance there to win it, but by hook or by crook, if they could make their way in, I'm sure they'd fancy their chances. Is that next round game? Is that at home? Is that at Dundalk, Nathan?
That's a good question. I'll need to check that. Yeah. It may well be in Dundalk. It is next Thursday night, and as I say, it's against a team from the Faroe Islands. I'll double check that. I think it is in Dundalk. Spurs are through to the next round, 3-1 winners away from home, but they needed to bring Harry Kane off the bench. Heung-min Son scored as well. And Celtic through to the next round, 1-0 winners away at Riga. Far from convincing, it seems. Elianusi scored a last-minute winner for Celtic in that one. Lots of games in the Carabao Cup as well. Liverpool 5-1 up away against Lincoln. Goals from Jordan Shaqiri, Takumi Minamino, and two from Curtis Jones in the first half, and then Minamino added a second right at the start of the second half. So Liverpool were 5-0 up, but just in the past couple of moments, Theo Eden has scored a consolation for Lincoln. A much changed Liverpool side, as you would expect. Though Virgil van Dijk did play in the heart of the Liverpool defence. 1-1 between Manchester City and Bournemouth. Liam Delap scored the goal. Lovely finish as well from Liam Delap. Son of, you guessed it, Rory Delap, the former Irish international. He's 17 now, Kenny. We're all getting a little bit old.
Yeah, there's been a few of them, Nathan, a few ex-players of mine, ex-colleagues whose sons have broken through at the professional level. Mark Kinsella was the first one a couple of years ago. Mark's young fella kind of broke through, was playing at Walsall, maybe still is at this moment. So yeah, you do feel your age. And, but it's great to see. That said, you know, it's a great story. Not exactly. I haven't seen enough of Rory's young fella play. I'm not sure how far he can throw the ball. Not as, not as far as, his old man.
He's more of an attacking player than his father was, and by all accounts hasn't got the throwing gene. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Is he as laid back as his old man?
You tell me. Why, was Rory de Lapa an extremely laid back character?
He was a lovely fellow, Rory. Lovely fellow, but oh yeah, really, really, really laid back. But yeah, it's a great story. Good luck to him. Not easy to break through at Manchester City. Those success stories are few and far between, but he's got his opportunity tonight and sounds as if he's taking it.
Didn't play a huge amount of times for the Republic of Ireland. I think he played 11 times in the end over the space of 5 or 6 years when he was, by and large, playing a lot of Premier League football. Like, what sort of level was Rory de Lapp at? Because when you think of Rory de Lapp, you don't think about the footballer, you just think about the throw-ins.
Yeah, that's a shame. You're right, and we've kind of made a joke of it there. That's a bit of a shame, but it's not to disparage Rory. He was a fine football player. Very versatile. I mean, it's a bit of a cliche saying it kind of went against him maybe, but he could occupy, play any number of positions, great kind of physical, just as kind of physical makeup. You could play centre half, full back, right side midfield, someone play centre midfield, possibly even up front at times as a central striker. And one of those players you kind of hang your hat on, Nathan, in terms of performance. You could rely on him kind of seven out of 10, good character, good attitude, and a good lad to have around the dressing room. So he would have been in a lot of Irish squads, but you're right, probably wouldn't have got too many starting appearances, but yeah, fine player. And if he kind of instilled some of those attributes into his son, just in terms of kind of work ethic and kind of mentality, that type of thing, and obviously his son had a head start.
I guess it shows again the depth of talent that was there around that generation as well, because he was playing Premier League football for so many years and still has only 11 caps. If he was around in this day and age and he was playing Premier League football, he'd be getting a lot more than 11 caps.
Yeah, no, I take your point, but I'd always look at the individual attributes of players rather than maybe just, well, they played at a certain level, you know, they only played championships, so maybe he's not good enough to play a senior international level. I think that's a factor, Nathan, of course it is, in terms of the higher the level that you play at, the higher caliber of player you're playing against, it kind of sharpens your game and improves you. I think that is a point, but your kind of natural kind of characteristics don't change no matter what kind of level that you're playing at. But you're right, international level, it's not easy to break through and hold down a position. Rory was a bit unfortunate. Probably Jeff Kennett, to be honest, which just popped into mind, was probably similar. Jeff was a wonderful footballer. I played with him at Birmingham towards the tail end of his career. And Jeff had a wonderful career. Won the Premiership with Blackburn and played at the top level and a top club, one of the best clubs at the time. But it was a bit of a struggle for Jeff because he had the likes of Gary Kelly there at the time, Steve Finnan.
Dennis Irwin.
Steve Carr. Dennis played the left. Yeah, of course, Jeff could play both sides. And I mean, if Jeff had to come around 10 years before or after those players, he probably would have been looking at 80 caps, let alone maybe the 40-odd that he won. So just kind of timing plays his part as well. So, yeah, but that's the level you're at, top international football. Not easy. It's great to make the initial squad of 23, but even harder to break into that starting 11 and maintain your position.
Stephen Kenny announcing his next 23-man squad, by the way, for that playoff against Slovakia next Tuesday. I can't imagine there'll be a huge amount of changes from the previous squad, though there are a couple of injuries to keep an eye on, Robbie Brady being the main one. 103 minutes gone now, so edging towards half-time in extra time, and still 1-1 between Sheriff and Dundalk. And there have been more goals in Liverpool's game. Marco Grujic has scored a sixth for Liverpool, and then Lewis Monsma has scored a second for Lincoln. So it's Lincoln 2, Liverpool 6 in that match. Marco Grujic, one of the players that may well end up leaving the club and getting Liverpool a lot of money back in with the way they do things. Manchester City still 1-1. And I should have said Aston Villa were 3-0 winners against Bristol City. Kenny, since you were last on with us on Monday morning, there's been a lot of talk about one of the players that you were speaking about with Gerard Owen, which is Thiago. And your opinion of him created a little bit of a social media storm. I know you're not on Twitter, so you don't see it, and you're probably better off at this stage. That the questions you raise over his maybe defensive capabilities within that Liverpool side. Are you aware of this? That the Liverpool fans are unhappy with you?
No, I wouldn't be aware, no.
So the issue they feel is that Thiago came on, showed his abilities, and we were talking to John Giles tonight, and he was impressed with Thiago and feels that he can give Liverpool a totally different dynamic. Also feels that maybe Fabinho may be better suited to being a centre-back in this Liverpool team. Do you think there's a case with Thiago that actually they don't need him defensively, that there's no great responsibility on that player in that Liverpool team because they have so much possession of the ball, that those defensive attributes that you're looking for aren't really relevant for this Liverpool side?
No, I don't think that stands up at all, to be honest. Liverpool have never been in possession. They've never dominated possession of the football. They don't really covet the football in the same way as Manchester City.
Has that not changed? Like, if you look at that game, I know Chelsea were down to 10 men in the second half, but Liverpool had all the ball in the second half.
Yeah, but I wouldn't make a judgment call off the back of 145 minutes. I'd make a judgment call off the past 2 or 3 years on the club and how his team has played. Actually, Liverpool, a team I've most enjoyed watching the style of football over the past couple of years, not just regardless of the fact they've won Champions League and league title. I like their style of football in terms of they don't overcomplicate the game at times to get the ball back to front as early as possible. You know, they're aggressive out of possession in terms of hunting the ball back, play that kind of high-energy game, generally speaking. So that's the type of football, generally, I enjoy watching playing. So you mentioned the fact about Thiago. I think nobody's arguing about his footballing qualities, Thiago. He's a lovely player. He's a quality technician. And if that's the type of player that you want at the base of your midfield, if that's the only attributes you're looking for, well, then he does get into your Liverpool team for his choice ahead of Fabinho and Henderson. But I'm not one of those people who can just... you know, just forget about the defensive qualities of a player. I think there has to be somewhat of a balance in the team. And even if you're a team who dominates possession, there will be times in the game you will be asked questions defensively, particularly on counter-attack. You know, some very clever teams will sit behind the ball, will concede possession to you and will look to break and break quickly on you. And I think that's when the defensive midfielder becomes really important in terms of his positional sense. Is that a kind of instinct to sense danger, to drop back into full-back positions in between the two centre-halves and can just do a defensive job. A defensive job means, you know, how to defend in 1v1 situations, good decision-making, when to stay on your feet, when to go to ground. Sometimes it's not about making tackles left, right and centre, Nathan. You can actually be a very good defender without actually touching the ball.
Mm.
And that's about kind of, you know, your positional sense, shifting 5 yards to your right, your left, cutting off passing lanes into the opposition forwards, getting tight to people, forcing them back down the pitch without making a tackle or without kind of touching the ball. And you continue to do that over 90 minutes. You're not actually touching the ball. And people might think, well, he hasn't had a great influence on the game. But in effect, you are, because you're reading the game very well. You're sensing danger and positionally, you're putting yourself in the right position 99% of the time. So that's a kind of player that I value, and even in a team as successful as Liverpool, I think somebody like that in the holding midfield position is worth his weight in gold and is invaluable. I mean, the ideal is you have both, Nathan. You have a player who has both. Not too many of them around. That's a pretty high bar. I think Jordan Henderson, maybe of the three Liverpool players there, probably has that happy balance in terms of ability to get on the ball and pass it. Maybe hasn't got a fantastic range of passing, although I think his long range passing, Jordan Henderson's, that we saw actually at the weekend as well, is as good as anybody's. Fabinho probably has a better range of passing than Henderson, but I just feel as if Henderson's athleticism, his mobility, kind of trumps Fabinho in that respect. So that's why I think you kind of see them dovetail in that position, certainly last year. And some Liverpool players are leaning towards Fabinho, some others towards Henderson. I can understand that. I think that's a healthy debate to have. And now, Thiago coming in probably kind of, again, elevates the conversation again. Because I wouldn't argue the fact in terms of his football and ability, but I've seen him play over a long period of time. And initially, when he started out, Nathan, he could play in a number of kind of midfield positions, a little bit more legs. You could play him a little bit higher up the pitch. But the last couple of years, he's kind of dropped into that holding midfield role, particularly at Bayern Munich.
Mm.
I'm sure he was tested.
Was he not tested in that role at Bayern Munich defensively?
Yeah.
But you didn't you didn't think he was up to it.
No, I say up to it.
Probably a bit extreme. Sorry,
I just say it's not. Yeah, I just say it's not his strengths. And you're right at Bayern Munich. There's a team in the Bundesliga. We know how strong they've been, how dominant they've been. You know, dominate possession and over the period of 90 minutes, yeah, maybe he doesn't get himself into those situations far too often, or maybe those defensive deficiencies are exposed. But I think at the highest level, when the very big games come along, the top games at club level, and then in the Premiership, that'd be the top six, top eight teams, Champions League, when those kind of knockout stages come along, you come against the very best. Any kind of small frailties, I've always found this, that any kind of frailties, a little bit of soft centre, anywhere in the team, it gets exposed. It comes to the surface at those key moments and those big games. Opposition teams figure out, they sense the kind of weakness within the team. Manchester City found that out in Champions League over the past number of years. Why they haven't won it under Guardiola, because they've had those small deficiencies within the team, and it's been found out at the top level in those knockout stages of the Champions League. So I think he certainly strengthens the Liverpool squad, undoubtedly. But if you're asking me, of those three players, I'd reiterate what I said the weekend. Mm. For me personally, Henderson and Fabinho gets a nod ahead of him in those kind of holding midfield positions.
Do you see any possibility that Klopp changes his system for Thiago? Because it was interesting, actually, before the game, that when he was asked, could he start against Chelsea, he said, well, listen, he hasn't had a session, and at Bayern Munich, they play with two sixes and a 10, and that's not what we play with, so I can't just throw him into that. Do you see Liverpool having the players, if they wanted to change things, to play with two sixes and a 10?
Oh, absolutely. I think they can. I've probably made the point the last year. I'm surprised we haven't seen Klopp make that change very often the last year. He did it the year before, I remember. He'd withdraw one of the central midfielders if he was chasing the game, go with a flat two and introduce like a number 10, that kind of forward forward. Shaqiri, I remember coming on as a substitute and making an impact. So they have the players. And I think you're right. The argument, how do you get from me Thiago on the pitch and kind of protect him a bit defensively? I think you're right, Nathan. You get somebody alongside him and you play him in a two. So it'd be very easy to make an argument for Thiago plus Henderson, or Thiago plus Fabinho in that central midfield position. And then that frees up a position just in front of them. And that's a very specialised position. Like that's that number 10 position, isn't it? So when you do that, you take kind of Wijnaldum, Oxlade-Chamberlain and Keita out of the equation.
So who is that number 10 potentially?
Well, by the way, Minamino for me is an obvious one. I think you could even argue, excuse me.
Jota?
No, not Jota. Firmino is one who could just drop into a number 10. You play somebody high, you could play Salah straight down the middle. I think potentially going forward, Salah could play that number nine position, and Jota on the flanks. You've got options on the flanks anyway. So, yeah, I think Liverpool have got the players to do that. But that's quite a fundamental change in terms of how you play, going from that two and a number 10 to that holding midfielder and two number eight, just in terms of your kind of your patterns of play in possession of the ball, and even how you go and press the ball out of possession. That just takes a bit of an adjustment. I'm not exactly sure whether Klopp's prepared. He's been pretty regimental in how the team's played the last 3 or 4 years, Nathan. It's been 4-3-3 with that holding midfield player. So that's kind of a big sea change just to accommodate Thiago. But it is possible. And I actually would like to see, I think there's times when Liverpool can flip to that formation. Minamino is a player in particular I really like, but the more I see him play, I think, you know, he's not really suited to that kind of wide position. He likes to come on the inside and drive into those little pockets, and he can be very dangerous operating off the front. So I actually think Liverpool have some good, even whether Thiago's in the squad or not, I think they have the option to go on to that midfield too on that number 10. And obviously Jota as well, who we haven't spoken to a lot about. But for me, he's the most exciting signing. He's the one we should be talking more about, because it's a lot of money to spend for a backup forward. Mm. But I genuinely believe that Liverpool believe this fella, he's only 23. I think they believe he can mature and eventually take one of those front three positions. If Liverpool were to lose any of those front three in the next 2 years, and it is a possibility, times change, players move on. I think possibly they've brought this kid in, they've spent that amount of money because they believe by working with him, by coaching him, they believe he's got the ability to improve and actually step into Salah's shoes potentially, or Firmino shoes, maybe 1-2 years time. And if he can do that, he'll probably save him another £100 million in the transfer market.
What is it about Jota? Because I was over in Wolves a couple of times last season, and like, I love watching Ruben Neves, and would have thought of all those young Portuguese players, or the many Portuguese players they brought to the club, that Neves was the one who would be the £100 million player that would end up at one of the top four, the automatic top four clubs. And talking to people at Wolves, they would all, Jota is the one. And then you look at his bare stats in terms of goals scored. I know he's chipped in, but he's not at it's not a 20 goal a season. It's all goes through Jimenez. But everyone said there was something about this kid that was going to elevate him to another level. What is it about Jota that he looks such a good fit for Liverpool?
Well, I just think it's potential as well. He's not the finished product now. He's in 23. I think Liverpool probably feel there's more to come. They get him in their kind of environment and work with him over a period of time. Those improvements can come. But he's got obvious ability. I mean, he's versatile again. He can play left of a three in that Liverpool system, left or right. But I've seen him play, obviously, even in a front two for Wolves. He used to play with Jimenez up front in that 3-5-2. Yeah, very comfortable dropping off the front, kind of receiving the ball on the half turn. Good in 1v1 situations down the side. We know how good Mane and Salah have been traditionally over the years. Those 1v1 situations, attacking the space. He's quick, Nathan, clearly, which would be a fact. And I think he's quite bright. I look at him on the pitch in terms of his movement and his decision making. And it sounds, some forwards, they kind of run around a bit of headless chicken stuff out of possession and things like that and make poor decisions in possession of the football. This lad doesn't, to be fair. So I think all of those factors considered, that's probably the reason Liverpool have gone with him. And they probably banked themselves that this lad can improve. And he's got the football intelligence to take more information on board and improve. But I think the reason why he's going and not Neves, as you mentioned, Nathan's probably Neves is probably more fun than me. He's probably a player with more difficult to replace if Wolves were to let him go. All of their creativity really kind of flows through Neves in that central area. And if you watch Wolves play Monday night with Jota's absence, you look at the players who stepped up, Neto, Podens, they're already in the system, ready to step in. Similar type of players in terms of, ridiculously quick, kind of dynamic players who can operate kind of off the sides and down the middle. So they probably felt as if 45 million was good value for Jota, and they probably had ready-made replacements there in the squad already.
Well, the way Pep Linders, who was doing the press conferences, as is the way around these Carabao Cup games, he sounds like the prototype Jurgen Klopp player. He was talking about him being a pressing monster, the energy he brings. There was a statistic today that he's drawn 5 red cards across his couple of seasons in the Premier League, and almost all of them are where possession's lost quickly and he's onto it in a flash and a defender is scurrying back and brings him down, which is, if you're talking about Liverpool players and what he expects from his front three, Jota seems to fit right into that.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, that's it. Speed, dynamic speed on the counter attack, kind of transitions. Nathan, we hear about that an awful lot, and he's that type of player. And yeah, if he has that hunger to go and that kind of work ethic, out of possession of the football, and it's not just that, willing to kind of close people down. You've got to be switched on as well in terms of when you go, your decision make, when to press, how do you press, your kind of angle of approach. If you've got if you're switched on between the ears as well, and you have the legs and the turn of pace to go and do, and you're hungry to do it, well, that's a big asset to the team. We've seen that in modern football. If your front three is really switched on, and Liverpool front three primarily have been over the past couple of years, and that's been their kind of success. That initial press high up the pitch has disrupted opposition teams. They found it difficult to pass through that initial Liverpool press. But of course, the Liverpool front three can't go on forever. I mean, Mane is an amazing athlete. I don't see any drop off from him. Mm. Kind of Firmino's never been the quickest, but he's very switched on, very clever in terms of when to press and how to press. Probably Salah might be the one. He's always the interesting one for me in terms of his, it's just his, maybe that kind of speed, that speed which he had the first season at Liverpool. Now, you remember, he was so quick. I mean, in terms of pressing people, even in possession, ball played it behind. If he got 5 hours on you, no defender made that ground back on him in that first year. He was that quick. Just been a bit of a drop off maybe the last couple of years in terms of that kind of real speed over 20 yards. He's still a huge asset, and he's very prolific. And not suggesting by any stretch he's on his way out the door. But there will be in general some players kind of that bit of a drop off, tail off in terms of their speed, physical conditioning, happens a bit sooner for some rather than others. And potentially even Klopp's looking a couple of years down the road, thinking, looking at Salah, thinking, we want to keep him as long as we can, squeeze as much out of him as we can. But when that time comes, I want somebody already in the system who understands the role and he'll be ready to step in when we ask him. And I imagine they think Jota's going to be that player.
And you got a future proof. You got a future proof, which is what they're doing here. And it is that Alex Ferguson mantra of you strengthen from a position of strength, which it certainly looks as though Liverpool have done. Some of those players you mentioned are playing at the moment in the Carabao Cup against Lincoln. It's still 6-2. A couple of goals for Minamino, a couple of goals for Curtis Jones, Jerdan Shaqiri as well, and Marco Grujic. So Liverpool heading through to the next round where they play Arsenal. They're actually going to play Arsenal twice next week. They played them in the Premier League on Monday, and then they played them in the Carabao Cup on Thursday. It's absolutely relentless in terms of football at the moment. Manchester City have just gone 2-1 up against Bournemouth. We mentioned Liam Delap, who had scored the goal. I should mention he is eligible for Ireland, but he's playing for England at underage level, and it doesn't look as though he's going to switch back, unfortunately. And Phil Foden has just put Manchester City in front. Villa earlier 3-0 winners against Bristol City, but we're keeping a very close eye on events in Moldova, where the Sheriff won, Dundalk won. There are 4 minutes remaining. It looks as though it's going to penalty. And if Dundalk win this, they'll have a match against the team from the Faroe Islands for a place in the group stage of the Europa League. So that is going to be a bit of drama coming up. We might bring you some sort of live commentary, even though Kenny can't see it. You can just give some analysis anyways, Kenny, and just go with the flow. I'll describe it. I'll paint the pictures in. Sort of like what we do every Sunday, Kenny, because we've got two more live matches coming your way this Sunday on Off the Ball. Spurs against Newcastle. Myself and Brian Kerr are going to be on that one from 2 o'clock. And then, Kenny, yourself and Dave McIntyre will be on Manchester City against Leicester City. That one getting underway at 4:30. John Giles was on earlier and thought Manchester City were hugely impressive in the first half, but would have major concerns about their second half performance on Monday night in beating Wolves, that there were signs of the Manchester City of last season in terms of attitude, in terms of letting sides back into games, that they should have been out of sight. And he'd have big question marks as to whether they can get any closer to Liverpool if those old failings are still there. No David Silva, Sergio Aguero still injured and ever more injury prone, and still no real replacement for Vincent Kompany. Would you go along with any of that?
Yeah, I would go along with it in terms of the second half would be worrying, but probably for slightly different reasons than the ones that you mentioned there. I've just, first half, I was a little bit disappointed in Wolves, actually. Thought they were a little bit tentative first half. I made a couple of defensive errors, which I'm not used to seeing from the Wolves team. The tackle from Soyuz was, you know, unbelievable. That almost stuff, the fact he made the decision to go down. Even the ease at which City kind of tiptoed through them for that second goal generally doesn't happen. Wolves very well set up kind of defensively, very compact. You really have to work for your goals against Wolves. So the attitude was great first half. City passed the ball well, of course they did, but it was a bit disappointing with Wolves. The second half was better. They were at it, passing was slicker. And what they did second half, Nathan, was, I mean, simply put, they just put the ball in behind Manchester City's defence earlier. And then you saw the slight frailties in that City defence, even with the acquisition of Nathan Aki. Very good, solid, kind of reliable defender, but found it difficult to deal with the pace of Podens, nets and the presence of Jimenez when they are having to turn and run towards their own goal. And Wolves should have really taken advantage of that, should have got themselves back into the game. They had to be more clinical, probably would have got their heads in front almost. So they let Manchester City off the hook a little bit in that respect. David Silva, yes. Will he be a miss? Yes. But I think they have good options in that area. Foden in particular, Bernardo Silva can come into that area of the pitch. So yes, he'll be a miss, David Silva. I don't see a massive drop off in that central midfield area. As big a fan as I am of Aguero, I think his backup is too often talked down.
Really?
In all on, yeah.
Jesus has never shown he's at the level of Aguero.
Well, I don't think he's significantly off, to be honest with you. I'm a big fan of him. Never had a massive run of games. Always played second fiddle to Aguero, but always makes an impact when he comes off the bench or when he gets a run of games. I like the look of him. I really do. I think he's a top quality player. We're splitting hairs, but again, I don't see a massive drop off with Aguero in the team. For me, it's still. I still look back to that kind of central defensive area, and my gut feeling tells me that they need another one in the door. They need another top, I wouldn't say another A top class centre half in the door. And if they do that, then the signing of Nathan Ake makes a bit more sense to me, because with a top class centre half to play along Slide Laporte, having Nathan Ake as a backup centre half, somebody who can slide into a defensive three if they need him, and also somebody who can actually play a left back in a defensive four, that kind of makes sense. Suddenly then the signing of Nathan Ake makes sense as a kind of backup fill-in defender anywhere across the defensive line. But if they don't go and spend that money and get that other centre-half in, whether it's Koulibaly, that might be unlikely now, to be honest with you. Maybe Koundé from Sevilla, Upamecano could jump for one of them. If they get that type of player in with that kind of real kind of presence and that top of quality at centre-half, then I feel as if then, as long as the mentality is right with the players, which I'm sure it will be, they were stung last year, then I feel as if they can really put a charge and really chase down Liverpool this season.
Penalties in Moldova. It is finished. Sheriff 1, Dundalk 1. We're going to take a very quick break and we'll talk you through them in a moment.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
We have penalties in Moldova. A huge few minutes ahead for Dundalk. They're taking on Sheriff in the qualifying rounds of the Europa League. If they win this, they go through to the final qualifying round where they will play a team from the Faroe Islands next Thursday night. A huge opportunity for Dundalk. It finished 1-1 after normal time. The Moldovan side took an early lead, but Dundalk equalised on the stroke of half time through Sean Murray, and they are almost ready to go with the penalty kicks here on the Football Show. Kenny Cunningham is with us as well. Kenny, you can't see it, so I'll have to talk you through it. Remind me now, back in 2002 in Suwon, how many penalties would we have had to go through before you took a penalty kick for Ireland that night?
14, I think. I think that's what me and Duffers agreed before we'd agreed we'd go up and take a penalty. But I mentioned about the experience in that Dundalk team. I think that's what it matters, even in a penalty situation, Nathan. You got kind of people who are vastly experienced. They can kind of control their emotions a little bit better, you know, keep their heads clear and kind of execute the penalty. I'm thinking of the Dundalk players who might be on the pitch to take a penalty. I mean, I'm thinking of Hooban, Patrick, McElhenney, Duffy, people like this, Chris Shields, vastly experienced, even Brian Gartland. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he... I'd be interested to see who the five...
Kolovic has just scored the first one for Dundalk. Right. So they lead by 1-0. Gary Rogers, the vastly experienced Gary Rogers, in goal for Dundalk. I'm thinking of penalty shootouts. I'm thinking, unfortunately, of the FAI Cup final from Dundalk's point of view last season when they were beaten by Shamrock Rovers. But Gary Rogers, this is a huge chance... trying to watch it on the stream earlier on, it did look as though Dundalk had played very well and maybe should have won the game in the 120 minutes and Sheriff have scored their penalty kick there. So shootout ticking along quite nicely and both sides have scored their penalty kicks. You should have taken the penalty instead of Kilbane that night.
No, easy to say in hindsight.
No, it was easy to say beforehand as well, Kenny.
No. If you'd seen me taking penalties kind of in training, Kevin was the best choice. But you can't really. It's just nerve, really. I'm never convinced that managers telling players either to take kind of penalties. It's an interesting one. I mean, you can be very before the game. You can say, yeah, Gaffer, I'll have a penalty. I'm up for it. But by the time the penalties come around, things haven't gone your way in the game. Mm. Just your mindset's a little bit different. So it's very interesting what goes on between the ears just before those penalties are taken. But I'd always say get your best penalty takers out first, undoubtedly. I don't believe in the principle of keeping your best penalty takers till the end, because Ronaldo's found that to his cost on big, high-profile occasions. The penalty competition's been over. So at the very least, get your best penalty takers out early. And for me, you get your best penalty taker taking the third penalty, because that's always crucial.
Pat Hooban has just scored Dundalk's second penalty kick, so they lead by 2-1. All three penalties have been scored so far in this game, and now a chance for the home side, Sheriff, to draw back level. Gary Rogers making himself as big as possible, and he saves it. Gary Rogers dives low down to his left hand side and he makes the save, and it is advantage Dundalk. So they lead by 2-1 in this penalty shootout, and edging ever closer to a place in the final qualifying round for the Europa League.
Yeah, so this is your most important penalty for me, the third one. Always have your best penalty taker here, because there's always something on it. And in this case, it's, you know, three, whether you can score whoever it is. And if you can see who's walking up, Nathan, you scored his penalty at 3-1 up. You're pretty much, you're in a great position to go.
Sean Hoare walks up, strides up, and just puts it straight down the middle, Kenny, and he has scored. So 3-1 to Dundalk. They have that advantage.
Yeah, in a great position now. Like I said, psychologically, huge pressure now on the opposition player coming up.
Yeah, if they can't score this and they're taking their time, it's a long, long stroll forward by the Sheriff player. They don't seem to be in any great rush to take this at all. So Dundalk leading by 3-1. They've scored all three of their penalty kicks so far. Kolovic, Hubin and Hoare with the goals, and Gary Rogers saved the last penalty. Veloso now steps up for Sheriff. Left footer. Again, taking a little bit longer than the Dundalk players, and he sends it into the back of the net. He sends Gary Rogers the wrong way. So 3-2 Dundalk. So pressure back on Dundalk, but they have that one goal advantage. As I said earlier, they're going to play a team from the Faroe Islands, Klaksvik, who beat Dinamo Tbilisi 6-1. So while it looks a very appealing draw on paper, maybe it may not be quite that straightforward looking on that result. So Dundalk have scored again. It is their fourth penalty kick. Didn't quite see it from this stream who scored it, but they now lead by 4-2. So that means, quite simply, that Sheriff have to score their next two penalties or Dundalk are through. It was Patrick McElhenney who scored that penalty kick for Dundalk. So all the pressure now on Sheriff, or they're out. Simple as that for the home side. Gary Rogers has already saved one. €300,000 for Dundalk if they go through, potentially €3 million if they go through to the Europa League group stage. They step up, and again Gary Rogers is sent the wrong way. So 4-3, but Dundalk will have a chance with this penalty kick to go through to the final knockout stage. It's tense, Kenny. It's tense.
I'm thinking Chris Shields, Gartland, your most experienced.
It looks as though it's Chris Shields who is the player who is striding forward. They're in a rush to take these penalty kicks. Up he steps to send them through and scores, and Dundalk have won on penalties. They have beaten Sheriff, and it was Chris Shields. They're through to the final qualifying round of the Europa League. A huge victory for their new management team as well. Obviously came through in a lot of controversy, but their new Italian manager, Filippo Giovagnoli, well, that is a massive victory for Dundalk and for the League of Ireland in terms of what it means for ranking points and all that jazz. But for Dundalk, who should have won that game in normal time, and you can see what it means to the players on the pitch, and are through to the qualifying round. And then one team from the Faroe Islands between them and a place in the group stage where you can really get anybody.
Yeah, and you're right, Nathan. It's not just about Dundalk. I think it's the profile of the whole league. We all remember back to that campaign under Stephen Kenny. Dundalk was fantastic. Went to a lot of those games. Great atmosphere, great games, memorable, great performance from the team. They really were really competitive in the group. And it was great. And there was a lot of good feeling around the club at the time from amongst the Irish football and supporters. And it was a great buzz. So hopefully they can replicate that by winning the final game. And it's been a tough season for them.
Well, that's the most remarkable aspect of this, with all that has gone on and all the struggles off the pitch and, well, just the success story that has been Dundalk, sort of ripped apart, it's felt like in many ways, that here they are, a home tie against the team from the Faroe Islands next Thursday to get back in the group stage of the Europa League.
Yeah, I give the players a bit of credit for that. I spoke about it with somebody a couple of weeks ago, and I just felt as if they were at a point in the season, a bit of a crossroads, where it was the players themselves almost had to sit down. It was a very experienced group, battle-hardened group of players, and said, look, lads, this isn't good enough. You know, we're better than this. You know, we ought to go down with a whimper, or we turn it around. We're good enough to do it. We've proved it. And they've kind of done that very slowly, and there's still a lot to play for. Got the game that you've spoken about, Rovers of the weekend, still in the FAI Cup, so there's still plenty to play for. They could still really turn this season around and end it on a high, so hopefully that'll be the case.
Yeah, the pressure's all on them now, though, so they will have that home game. And we talk about the Faroe Islands, there's always an expectation. It'll be a good week for Brian Kerr. He'll be in demand. His expertise will be badly needed over the next 7 days. But suddenly, I can't imagine an Irish team will have gone into a game, a European game of such importance, as such hot favourites.
Yeah, but they can deal with that, Nathan. That's just the value of having that experienced group of players. They've been in the trenches together over the years. You know, all of those players, Rodgers and goal, Sean Gannon, Gartland, Andy Ball's back then, isn't he? Chris Shields, go on and on. Hoobin, Mountney, they've all been there. Dane Massey, so they can draw on that experience. And it won't be a given, you're right. I couldn't have believed that, Scarlett, when you said it, done over the Belize. I was thinking maybe a narrow victory for the Faroes, but 6-1, you know, that deserves a certain level of respect. I'm sure the Dundalk will have a look at them in terms of their strengths and weaknesses. Just got to be careful that home game as well, Nathan. It doesn't always work out that way. Opposition seems very clever playing away from home in terms of kind of, you know, set up for good, quick counter-attacking football. And you have to respect that. You know, it can't be a case of gung-ho, let's go at these and throw players forward, but I'm sure Dundalk won't. They've got enough experience. They'll have to be careful. They'll have to pick and choose their moments and be patient during that game. Respect the opposition. Hopefully, they'll have enough quality to get through on the day. And fantastic. And if they could be, if they were to achieve that, it'd be great. Great for them and great for the league as a whole. And great to look forward to that Europa League competition with them involved.
Well, if you're looking for the quality of the Europa League, Celtic, Rangers and Spurs have all qualified for the final knockout stage as well. Teams that are already through to the group stage. You've got Arsenal in there, you've got Leicester, Roma, Napoli, Benfica, Bayer Leverkusen. This is the quality of opposition that Dundalk could be facing over the winter. And considering the financial difficulties that every club is going to face, what a massive, massive boost. But again, $300,000 for winning this, $3 million potentially at stake if they can win next Thursday night. As a player, did the money ever come into it for you? Was money ever a motivation? Like, if you're in a relegation battle and you know there's potentially pay cuts coming down the track, like, is that something you allowed to get into your mind around games?
I remember the money came into when I was an 18-year-old, my first year at Millwall, playing reserve team football over in combinations. And we had a win structure. I think it was £12 for a win and £6 for a draw, and that mattered for the 18 year olds in the reserve team. That actually mattered, but that was obviously one extreme. Obviously, when you progress and
you're on 50 grand a week, Kenny, it doesn't matter at that stage. It's
50 grand a year for about the first 10 years of my career. But I don't think so. You can push that to the side. Their discussions would take place with the club prior to the game, and it's important they're dealt with quickly and promptly and pushed to the side. You don't want that dragging on in the lead up to the game. You want your focus totally on the game, and players will understand the more success you have on the pitch in football, in terms the rest of it, in terms of the financial incentives and stuff, that'll follow you anyway, and you'll get what you deserve. So no, I think just the opportunity to play Europa League and against some of those teams, Nathan, like you could potentially be talking about, I mean, Napoli or, you know, Roma, teams of that stature, you know, coming to Ireland to play. We had a bit of a taste of it with AC Milan. It was that game against Rovers, and it was absolutely amazing to see those players up close. You heard the Rovers players speak afterwards about, oof, amazing. You know, you can watch them all on video, you can watch all the tapes in terms of what they're good and, you know, not so good at, and you can prepare yourself until you walk on the pitch and you get a taste of it up close. You don't appreciate how good the standard these players are at. So that's potentially where Dundalk could be in a week's time.
Yeah, Jack Byrne was on last night saying that Zlatan was like a ghost. He just somehow arrived in positions and nobody would ever be able to pick him up. I hope you weren't too close to Zlatan last Thursday, were you?
Well, I wouldn't have been looking for his jersey, put it that way. I mean, that was a rotten jersey AC Milan turned up in.
It's Zlatan's jersey. You heard he's tested positive for COVID.
No, I didn't hear that, to be honest.
That's what I'm just saying. I'm glad you kept your distance.
I don't think whoever got his jersey will be giving it back, be throwing it out on the rubbish because of that, to be honest.
No, it was Aaron Green got his jersey. Aaron Green got his jersey because Aaron Green's son was one of the ball boys at the match. So he went up to Zlatan and said, and managed to get the jersey for his son, which was a pretty nice touch. But AC Milan still in there as well. They were amongst the winners this evening also. They won by 3-2, so they're still in the mix. Unfortunately, of course, even if these teams are coming to town, it seems highly unlikely that anybody is going to be able to go to the matches, which is the real shame of all this. Just to run through the results in the Carabao Cup, Divock Origi added a seventh for Liverpool, so 7-2 winners over Lincoln. Manchester City 2-1 winners over Bournemouth. Liam Delap and Phil Foden with the goals there, and Aston Villa 3-0 winners against Bristol. So we do have our two live commentaries. There's goals aplenty in the Premier League. There'd never been a 10-game weekend, Kenny, with more goals than last weekend. That must be an absolute nightmare for you. All this entertainment, all this gold, all this brilliant attack and play. Where are the defenders? Where have all the great defenders gone, Kenny?
Oh, well, you've made me argument for me, Nathan. I think I'm glad to hear we're both singing off the same song sheet. No, there's some great attack and play. I was covering the Leeds. My God, it seems about like
Fulham.
A month away. Doesn't
Leeds,
it? That much football. Yeah, I mean, 4-3, there's some amazing goals in that game. Costa for Leeds, make two magnificent strikes. Reid is substitute for Fulham. Mitrovic, brilliant back post header from a Teddy cross. So there's some fantastic goals. But yeah, it does nod me a little bit. Seems a bit of a whinge, I know, but it does nod me a little bit in terms of the standard of some of the defending, because I just feel as if it's very difficult to quantify the quality of the attack and play when you're up against such poor defending and some such poor like defensive units. I think it's very hard to actually gauge the quality of the attack and play. Easy to say, oh, brilliant play, great finish, but then you look and you think, well, do you know what, shouldn't really have been given, been put in that position, shouldn't have had an opportunity to get that shot off, to make that little 1-2 if the quality defending had it been better. So, and for me, the quality of the attack and play suffers if the defensive structures aren't strong enough. One, for me, always complements the other. And when an attacking team can get the very best of a good defensive structure and score those type of goals that you were talking about, well, then you're talking about a top-class game of football.
Great stuff, as always. Kenny, you'll be part of our commentary team on Sunday. Two live games. First up, at Spurs against Newcastle at 2 o'clock. Myself and Brian Kerr will be at that one. And then Manchester City against Liverpool with Dave McIntyre alongside Kenny. I can't believe when you were in on Monday, Kenny, you were talking about Tony Eboa's goal that you provided that beautiful cushioned header assist for. It was 25 years on Tuesday since that goal. You're getting old. 25 years. Dear God.
I'm not getting old. I'm old.
Kenny, great stuff. We shall talk to you on Sunday. Just let you know, the chapter 5 of the 20 by 20 movement, well, this chapter is all about asking the questions that will change the future for women in sport. There's a new 20 by 20 podcast called Choose What's Next, and that goes live this Friday. You'll be able to download it at 20by20.ie, or you can get it on the OTB Sports website as well. We'll take a quick break.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
So a huge night for Dundalk. They have won on penalties in Moldova against Sheriff. So they're into the final qualifying round for the Europa League. And in that final qualifying round, they will play a team from the Faroe Islands at home next Thursday night. Klaksvik, though, well, we shouldn't write them off because they were 6-1 winners against Dinamo Tbilisi tonight. Also wins in the Europa League for Celtic, Rangers and Spurs. While in the Carabao Cup, Liverpool scored 7 against Lincoln. Manchester City 2-1 winners against Bournemouth. And Villa 3-0 up. 3-0 winners against Bristol City. Tomorrow morning on OTBAM, they've got Johnny Cooper, Andy Mitten, Alan Quinlan, and Phil Egan is going to be splitting the weekend's Premier League matches into three categories: must watch, might watch, and won't watch, in an exciting new feature that will help you navigate all the games on TV at the moment. I'm telling myself I must not watch Burnley Southampton on Saturday night. I need to get a life and something else to do with my time. But I don't know, maybe that's a must watch game according to Phil Egan. You'll find out in the morning from 7:30. Tomorrow afternoon, our American football show, The Snap. That's live from midday, previewing the weekend's game stateside. Then we've got the Paddy Power half hour at 1:30, focusing on the upcoming round of Premier League games. And on tomorrow night's show from 7 o'clock, we've got Cullen Kavanagh on his retirement, Dublin footballer Jennifer Dunn, and Friday night racing as well. We'll also see if we can get to tonight's hero for Dundalk, Gary Rogers. You will be expecting a phone call very soon from our producer, JP. Hopefully, for once, he answers. JP is a local boy. He loves Dundalk. Season ticket holder. Maybe not. Tom Dunn is up next. Good luck.
Give him a ball and he out of grass. He'll give you a move for the perfect pass. Give him a ball and he out of spice. Give you a move. move with guilt-like your eyes.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.